Today on Pilgrim Radio's His People, Pastor J.T. Reeves on ministry to the inner city through patience and sports.
The teamwork aspects, the relationship, and I think specifically with football, we've seen, Ohio State University, a variety of universities around the country, like, there's been movements of God recently because there's almost nowhere else where you have that sort of connection and bond relationally. So I think that's where I've begun writing and thinking on this topic is there's something unique in our culture and our time where we need to leverage our opportunities as the athletes and as coaches.
J.T. Reeves, next. Coming up, we'll find out how sports was used to reach inner city Birmingham, Alabama. J.T. Reeves serves at Radius Church in South Carolina, and he's written the piece, Sports Open Surprising Doors, the story of an inner city movement. Here's Spencer Dahlke.
What inspired you to write this article and pursue inner city ministry?
I grew up a church planter's kid, which means I was always in that kind of starting out realm, like you're building things and creating things at all times. And we would move every 1 to 3 years, and my dad would, he'd do everything you're not supposed to do. And so we'd go plant a church and then move to the next spot and go plant a new church. And that always meant just really investing in your community, wherever you were. And there was a really big emphasis on whatever sports team we're on, whatever school we're going to, like we are going to be sons and daughters of the Reefs, and we're going to be a light for Jesus. My whole life has been deeply invested in who's around me. That's why Radius Church is actually called that. It's who's in your radius, who's like in your concentric circle sort of a thing. Yeah. And it's always been part of our DNA. And so moving to Birmingham for graduate school is kind of how I ended up here at Beeson Divinity School, and ended up helping with a church called Shades Mountain Baptist. And they've just done an incredible job of really embodying that in an environment that few places have been able to invest in over the years. It's just a hard city in a lot of ways, Birmingham is. So I had a lot of fun learning under a guy named Miles McGee, who just taught me a ton. And I was able to write about that with Desiring God.
I noticed this was sort of more or less like an interview that you had with him and his experience ministering and, I understand, coaching sports in Birmingham. I also understand maybe you also minister with him. I don't know if that's accurate or not, but...
Yeah, so we sat down together, and he's the expert. You know, he's been down there since he graduated college, was a quarterback at University of Alabama, Birmingham, UAB, and immediately went down there and just started investing in his community. He was there for about 10 years. But the house where he lived at, he ended up moving after about 10 years there because of some violence that kind of occurred around his family. I actually moved into that same neighborhood. So I live a couple houses down where he used to live. And so we connected over where I wanted to live. And he really influenced me in wanting to work with him. So last year I did a residency program underneath him. I coach basketball, not a football coach. And so, yeah, I ended up coaching at some schools and using that as kind of a doorway for the gospel and giving a lot of messages to teams. And a lot of the coaches in that area are just so, Miles has built such credibility by being a man of integrity that someone like me, I'm able to step into some of those arenas, and some of the skill sets I have from playing college basketball in the past was just able to invest in that community.
It seems like God has kind of uniquely equipped you. You've talked about, like, as you were planting churches, learning to connect with people and learning to do that. I imagine you have to do that quickly when, you know, it's always a new set of people. Yeah. Or, you know, maybe people come along with you, I suppose. But it seems like God has equipped you to minister along with Pastor McGee.
When you watch your folks always be people who are living sent, are living underneath this gospel commission, as one of six kids, we always knew, hey, we might be getting up and moving tomorrow. And sometimes it happened like that. The week before school, our folks would be like, all right, well, we're moving. And you just live in that sort of a mindset. You know that immediately when you come into a community, you have to make it a place where you're really going to impact that place for the kingdom. And you may only have 10 months at certain points of your life to do that. And so certainly was trained for that, I guess, in some senses. But the Lord was just really kind to give me a family where that was very normal. And so stepping in with Miles, I learned so much from him still. But was not super hard in the way that maybe it should have been.
Tell us a little bit about Birmingham. It's the inner city, you describe it as such, and maybe those of us from parts of the country that don't have that kind of community nearby, what is it like?
If I understand right, Spencer, I know your audience isn't necessarily from the South, probably not necessarily from the city all the time. And Birmingham is both of those things, in the South especially. Like, you think of the South, you think Birmingham is one of the belt buckles of the South, which means there's both a lot of Southern culture around it. Of all the cities in the country, Birmingham's known from history as the most segregated city, from Martin Luther King Jr.'s mouth when he was here. And I actually live a couple hundred yards just from that prison where he was in prison not too long ago, wrote that letter from a Birmingham jail. And so there's still, like, that's all really present. And A.H. Parker High School, where Miles really got invested and has been able, like, that was the place where a lot of the children's marches took place from. And so if you know a little bit about the history of Birmingham, you know that when Martin Luther King Jr. came, like, none of the adults really wanted to get invested in stuff because they could lose their jobs, they could lose their livelihoods. But what they found was that the students could get invested in things. And so what really moved the civil rights movement was a couple high schools getting involved and taking marches, and some photos specifically of the ways that those marches just became really violent. And so you have all that, like, in the background. But I mean, honest, some of it's forgotten, some of it's not really thought of on a day-to-day basis. But the lines between high income and low income are extremely stark, and the lines between white and black are incredibly stark. There's a couple of statistics in that article you could read about, and it's just shocking, as in 99% to 1% sort of levels that you're seeing, which really characterizes a place. And so even when you think about church planting, when you think about moving into an area, you have to know the place where you're going. A place like Birmingham has such rich history that you can't just walk in and try to change everything immediately. You really have to become like Jesus does. He becomes incarnate and he dwells with us. And he spends those 30 years learning. What? You know, Advent season, we're talking about the birth of Jesus, and he's becoming an infant to walk in the ways as a human being. And I think that what I've learned specifically about city ministry and places with a lot of heritage, and this will be a lot of the listeners on this show too, just with where you are in your environment, there's a lot of tradition and history that goes on there. You can't just step in and change things. You have to step in and ask, where's the Lord already moving this story? And where can I, like, actually help in shifting that story in a more beautiful direction? And so that's really what Miles has done so well. And I've learned a lot from that.
You write a little bit too that these kids that you work with, that sometimes they have baggage, and I imagine they maybe have trauma, that sort of a thing. Is that mostly just kind of like the history of the white-black segregation, or is there like family trauma too that these kids go through, or what kind of baggage do these kids that you work with carry around with them?
That's been something that's been so humbling for me, coming from such a secure foundation. But yeah, Birmingham's one of the most, the highest level of single parent homes in the country, top five in that category, and fatherlessness in particular is just rampant. And that has to do with its history, but it's a recurrent reality. And that's much more the focus than sort of the systemic sort of idea. There's some stuff going on really right now that's just really hard. And guys on my basketball team, their brother gave them dope to smoke. They're 12. Or one of the sixth graders on our team, his cousin was shot and killed during the season. And you can just watch as his demeanor shifts. And he moves from someone that was brighter, and honestly, we had to get on him for being too goofy, unpracticed, to just changing into this darkness entered into his life. Those kind of things you don't get at the high school that I grew up at. And it's not even terribly abnormal for almost all of your players to be smoking or drinking something in their, on your middle school basketball team, or several of your players experiencing homicides in their immediate or close to immediate family. And so starting to, like, deal with that, and I come in and they don't just give me their full story immediately, but you start seeing things. And I truly, Spencer, I haven't been there long enough. I now work at this church in South Carolina, anticipating to kind of come on there soon. Miles has years and years of storytelling with that. But just from the short time I've been involved with these students, there are deep wounds and just a need for a true Heavenly Father and a true family, which has been shocking to watch, this hunger to get involved in the church, which is God's, you know, not utter antidote in this life for all these problems, but it is a beautiful way that the Lord has actually created something to sustain all this brokenness, which requires us to enter into the sin and suffering of those places without running away from them, which traditionally has been what a lot of the churches in the South have done, is run away from some of the brokenness. And that just seems to be the opposite of what Jesus does in the scriptures.
Well, my guest today is J.T. Reeves. He's a writer and teaching pastor at Radius Church in South Carolina, and the author of Sports Open Surprising Doors, the story of an inner city movement. I know for my own self, people I've interacted with before that have really hard growing up family life. When you're interacting with someone that have these sorts of unique challenges, it's hard to talk about it. And it's hard to know what to do with it, especially if you're trying to share the gospel with them and be like, well, you know, there's a God who loves you. And it's like, but, you know, all this evidence, maybe he doesn't, you know. How do you navigate?
I mean, in some ways, what I'm going to communicate is something that I haven't been able to follow through with, which is difficult. But I mean, the truth is, the reason that Miles and that this ministry as a whole has been so powerful in these students' lives is because you just come back the next day. I mean, that's really the best answer to that question, I think, in what I know so far, which is not much in some ways. But you just come back and you say, I'm still here with you and I'm not scared of what's going on in your life. And I don't need anything from you. I don't need to hear your story right now to fix you up. But I want to hear your story because I want to know you. I love you. And I say that by being present with you day after day after day. And go, like a lot of our older guys, we have this mentorship program at our church. They just pull up to the practice. And that's all they do. They just come and they watch and they encourage. And the coaches like it because it actually gives some sort of accountability from home a little bit. And they're not being, you know, they don't need to be the show. And they bring food sometimes. And that says so much that when they get in the car and they drive the guys home, you know, maybe they might open up about something that actually happened that day. I think just being present. And then two, those minutes and hours when you don't have anything planned, but you're just in the car driving together or whatever it is. Those are the moments when something happens that you may not be expecting to happen. But some of these people just don't have anybody to reach out to. So if you become someone that sets up the precedent of, hey, I'm somebody who you can reach out to. Like I was just at a funeral of a horrible situation that took place. And one of the mothers of just some of our really awesome guys who've been baptized recently passed away really suddenly, actually going to her son's baptism. When we're there, the family themselves, they don't come to Shades. They don't know this church. What they knew and what they said from the front was, this is a church that does really well in tragedy. And we just knew that y'all would be here for us. And so we want to actually have this, you know, funeral service at this church. And that is a way for the gospel to really enter in. Now you're the people that do the hard and the nitty gritty stuff that maybe other people don't want to do. And it is just ugly sometimes. And I don't know how to navigate most of this stuff, but you're just there. The Holy Spirit does the rest.
It just kind of makes me think about how Jesus himself talks about the Pharisees are bad and oppressive shepherds. And he describes himself as a good shepherd. Would you shed some light on how you think we as Christians could interact with these kinds of people, the way that Christ interacted with a broken world when he stepped in?
We love thinking about Jesus. I think there's a couple pitfalls that always take place with city ministry and really ministry across cultures. One is, I expect you to be able to do XYZ, or I expect you to have the same cultural assumptions about the way you pay attention to people, your manners, whatever it is. Therefore, I immediately write you off. Because you can't get it. or whatever. And I think that's often a place where we miss Jesus, and where the Pharisees, they have this sort of standard that just, they just expect everyone to accept their standard and go by what they're kind of communicating. And this standard that isn't even necessarily gospel. It's just what I know in my culture. And I think that is, that's right. And so you actually miss the Matthew 5, the meek and the poor, and that you miss them because you've got this standard of individual that the meek and the poor can't stand up to. So I think there's that kind of starting point of when you enter in lowly, of Philippians 2, sort of, I'm here to serve you, I'm here to be humble, then everything else can kind of follow. There's another pitfall in wanting your ministry to grow, as in everywhere else in ministry. I mean, if I'm at my church preaching, whatever, like however I want to communicate, I can't force these guys or girls to want what I want them to want. I can't force them to make me the center of their life and make me their mentor or whatever it is. I can only open up the invitation and then be there day after day. And at some point, I might be able to earn a little bit of authority. And I think there's a way to, we speak with authority as Christians. And so we speak the truth with authority. When I'm giving a Devo before, you know, football game, I'm going to speak, I'm going to tell them what's what, you know, and they don't want anything else than that. What I can't do is just expect that I have access to their life immediately. And it would be great if we had 100 people to do whatever. Instead, you just start with one and you really care about that story and that person and that life that Jesus has created himself. And even at Jesus, he just was so not efficient sometimes. And I think there's a lot of beauty in the inefficiency of, this is a bleeding woman, I guess I'll heal her, and then I'll go raise somebody from the dead. And I think that's part of this ministry, is there's always things over there and things over here and things I want to do. But here's the thing right in front of me, and I have to sit here with this in this moment.
I've had interviews with other people before, too, about American culture at large is one of efficiency, which is in a lot of ways our country's strength. But like you're saying, spiritually, efficiency is not really how God operates. Yeah. Are there ways that you think our listeners could start practicing inefficiency? Do you know what I'm saying?
That's excellent. That's excellent. Yeah. Actually, that's a chapter of a book I'm coming out with is on Jesus, the super popular influencer, and how we have this misunderstanding of Jesus as someone who is always having to go, go, go. And on the one hand, man, Spencer, I think a lot of us need to hear the go, go, go. Like, let's hurry up. Let's be a little bit more efficient with this time. We're going to have to stand in front of God as the judge. But then at the same time, the first thing I would say to someone asking for ways to be inefficient is prayer. Unless you actually believe that God moves the whole world and that the most efficient thing is just to sit in his presence and to attend ourselves to him, then you're not going to have value on prayer. But if you actually think that it's God who's doing the work and God who's building the house, and then sitting with the Lord for half an hour, an hour longer is not abnormal. And actually, for the efficiency person's mind, like, that has to be one of the most efficient things that we do, is to say, God's worthy of wasting my time. Worship is always this excess of our money and our time. And it doesn't necessarily go, you think about the woman pouring out her oil on Jesus's feet. And you just say, with Judas, all right, that could have fed a whole lot of the poor. And Jesus says, no, like, you missed the point. Worship is doting on me, spending time with me, giving me yourself. So I think prayer is that key thing that the church always has to come back to, that a work in people like in the big cities, wherever they are, or the big, I guess we're in the internet age, so the big digital worlds, they can't even comprehend giving up an hour of their time to just sit with God. But we shouldn't be able to comprehend not doing that in some respects. So I think the beautiful inefficiency is something that actually keeps us so healthy as men and women of God. If I've got meetings here and here and here and here, nobody can mess with my meeting with God. And then that attends to that Sabbath sort of principle of, in an age where everybody's kind of taking church online or moving this, I'm going to be with the people of God, for the people of God, to worship my God. Actually, I'm going to do the inefficient thing. And I'm going to say, it's actually worth being with other human beings and saying, this is a holy God that we want to worship together. And there's something powerful about us coming together and celebrating the risen Christ. So I think just the things the church has always done to be inefficient, which is really what moves all of history, is the way we call on God.
Asking more about this ministry you have in the inner city, you talk about sports opening surprising doors. I understand Birmingham has kind of a long-standing history of excellent athletes coming out of Birmingham, but you describe it as a surprising way to minister to these kids. Tell us about what surprised you.
I grew up sports all the way through. Age five, I'm starting to play. I have six kids in my family. Five of us played college basketball. So we got a whole lot of sports. I had a really frustrating relationship with sports for a long time of how can I be a follower of Jesus and like go dominate people on the court? And it was really confusing for me, but I really think Shades Mountain Baptist Church and my work there, my work in the inner city in Birmingham has taught me how the Lord just uses sports. And what Colin Hanson, he's a writer with the Gospel Coalition, he calls it this front porch sort of an idea where sports, unlike almost anything in our culture, like we have lost all of our ways to really connect with people on the front of their porches, with our neighbors or with the people in our community. And we've become so digitized that we're missing these spaces to encounter others. And sports is still this huge phenomenon where our whole culture is like, all right, let's go to the ball game. And you're going to put your kids in the ball game. I'm going to put my kids in the ball game. Everybody in the school is going to be interested in this. So it's a really unique avenue for the church to engage our neighbors in a loving way. And they just have done that so well. Miles has modeled that so well that year after year after year by throwing the football with young kids and coaching families. And my dad doing that too, growing up as a church planter. And you just show, I have interest in this thing that we both have a common interest in. But how does the gospel kind of move through our common interests, our friendship, our bond that has been created? And I think the gospel kind of always moves in that realm. The Lord moves at the pace of relationship. And so sports have a way of fostering that, that when we actually do it well, I mean, there's a lot of ways to do it very wrongly. And for it to be just about the elevation of the self, which is a denial of relationship. But if it's about, hey, I want to connect with you, I want to be with you in this, the teamwork aspects, the relationship, and I think specifically with football, we've seen, you know, Ohio State University, a variety of universities around the country, like there's been movements of God recently because there's almost nowhere else where you have that sort of connection and bond relationally. So I think that's where I've begun writing and thinking on this topic is there's something unique in our culture and our time where we need to leverage our opportunities as athletes and as coaches.
Where do you think the ministry to the inner city is going next? Where do you think God is bringing it? And how do you think our listeners could parse out whether or not God is calling them to the inner city?
Yeah, I think as far as here, who knows? In some ways, I think just continuing to find mentors. And your second question really goes with your first in that the question is always what Jesus says it is, which is, you know, we're looking for workers for the harvest. And there's always plenty of people who are longing for someone to just come and say, hey, do you know this man named Jesus? Like, he's going to change your whole life. And people are waiting to encounter someone that actually cares about them enough to say that. But we don't have enough people who are ready to go and to be sent in that way. So I think if there's any place near you where there's the poor, where there's the marginalized, I think that's absolutely part of the gospel is that we go to those places. That doesn't mean you need to go full time necessarily, but maybe it does. So I think really to go back to what we've discussed already is in that place of prayer, when we're asking the Lord, I'm going to say the whole world doesn't matter to me as much as following you. And so I'm going to deny myself and take up my cross at Luke 9. If that's the case, then who knows what the Lord could open up in your life. But at the very least, we should be those who are connected in some way to people who can give almost nothing to us. And we give them our own lives and our own finances and our own relationships. That's just part of what it means, especially in the Gospel of Luke and the Book of Acts, like such an emphasis on the church is the people who goes with the people who nobody else goes with. And so I would encourage any listener, who is it in your life who actually is someone that maybe other people don't want to be around or people that other people just haven't been able to invest in for a long time. And that might be in the inner city. That might be in some totally other realm. But that's where the gospel is so unique, is that it's not a social climbing. It is something where we're giving of ourselves to another.
You've been listening to His People on Pilgrim Radio. Many thanks to our guest, South Carolina pastor J.T. Reeves, discussing his article, Sports Open Surprising Doors, The Story of an Inner City Movement. To read it, go to desiringgod.org. On tomorrow's program is Gerald Sitzer on historical Christian spirituality in the lives of the early church in martyrs.
When Christianity is operating at its best, we're always going to be a threat, sometimes direct, sometimes subtle, because our ultimate Lord is Jesus. It's not a political party. It's not a presidential candidate. It's not an ideology. It's not a particular system of government. None of that. It's always Jesus the Lord.
That's tomorrow at this same time right here on His People. Thanks for listening. Thank you.